weekend all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's tip off here in Washington, where the decisive Game 5 in the Women's National Basketball Association Finals will be played Thursday night. The Washington Mystics will host the Connecticut Sun. Both teams are bidding for their first WNBA championship. With their season on the line, the Sun rose at home Tuesday night when they beat the visiting Mystics 90-86 to even the championship series at two games each. Connecticut got strong performances from two women who played their college basketball right here in the Washington area. Sun center Jonquel Jones had 18 points and 13 rebounds. And Sun power forward Alyssa Thomas shined brightly with 17 points, 8 rebounds, and a game-high 11 assists.
Do or die. We know the importance of the first quarter. When we don't come out with that energy, we're playing down the whole game. So it was about throwing the first punch and defending home court. I don't want to lose. You know, I don't want my season to be over. So I'm just going to do whatever it takes to get a win, offensively and defensively.
Offensively and defensively, Alyssa Thomas was outstanding for the Sun in Game 4. She and her Connecticut teammates held Washington without a point over the final 2 minutes and 10 seconds. WNBA Most Valuable Player Elena Delladon had 11 points and 5 rebounds, and she said the Sun played more aggressively on defense. Delladon has been dealing with a herniated disc in her back. She says she felt looser and better in Game 4, and hopefully will continue to feel even better for Game 5 on Thursday night here in Washington. Elena Delladon played on the gold medal-winning USA women's team at the 2016 Rio Olympics in Brazil, and I think there's a very good chance we'll see Delladon on the USA team next year in Tokyo, where the American women will be bidding for their 7th consecutive Olympic gold medal. Also here in Washington, the U.S. men's national soccer team will host Cuba Friday night in its opening match of the 2019-2020 CONCACAF Nations League tournament. The head coach of the U.S. team is Greg Berhalter.
Nations League is where we want to put ourselves in position to advance to semifinals. We think it's a valuable tournament in the sense that you get to go away, you get to play in away stadiums. We haven't faced that yet, so we think it's valuable. We're at a stage right now with our group where we're going to use this in the right way and use this to learn and keep moving forward as a team.
The USA-Cuba game will be played at the new 20,000-seat Audi Field, located just a short walk from our Voice of America headquarters. The stadium is the home of Major League Soccer's D.C. United team. D.C. United winger Paul Arriola has been included on the USA's roster for the Cuba match. The 24-year-old Arriola has made 29 international appearances for the USA and scored 5 goals. 3 of those goals, in fact, were scored this year. Paul talks about the importance of the Cuba match and another Nations League game against Canada on October 15th in Toronto.
100% challenges. They are obviously important games for us, meaningful games. It's going to be good for us to get the competitive vibe that we had kind of in the Gold Cup and now putting ourselves in the Nations League, and obviously we want to do the best that we can, which is win all the games. And I think with the way that the staff has been from day one, they're going to set us up for success. And as players, it's our job to go out onto the field and to produce and do what we do best and show why we're part of the national team.
Paul Arriola has been part of the U.S. national team since 2016, when he scored a goal against Puerto Rico in his senior team debut. Arriola's goals this year came against Costa Rica in a friendly match and 2 goals in the CONCACAF Gold Cup tournament.
Luckily for me, I was a part of the previous camps. I'm a part of the big January camp the March and leading into the Gold Cup. And I'm very familiar with Greg and the system. You know, we had a few Skype calls and went over a couple games video. The staff has always been great in the way that they handle everything and approach it. And for me, the one thing that I can do when I'm away is focus on my club situation and playing well for my club and trying to replicate what I can from being a part of the national team and using it toward my advantage and my team's advantage on the club stage. And then when you come here, it's, you know, how quickly can you turn around and get back into the environment, the culture, the type of team that we are as a national team. So, you know, just kind of being myself and focusing on what's to come.
That's DC United and U.S. Men's National Soccer Team player Paul Areola, who's now focusing on a CONCACAF Nations League match against Cuba on Friday night here in Washington. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African football, Senegal and Nigeria are getting ready for high-profile friendly matches against five-time World Cup champion Brazil in Singapore. The Lions of Teranga of Senegal, runners-up to Algeria at this year's Africa Cup of Nations tournament, will play Brazil on Thursday. And the Super Eagles of Nigeria will meet the Brazilians on Sunday. Brazil's assistant coach, Kleber Xavier, describes Senegal's Teranga Lions as a strong and very well-trained team. He says Senegal conceded few goals during the Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Egypt and has interesting players like Liverpool star Sadio Mane and Paris Saint-Germain man Idrissa Gueye. Now, history certainly favors the Brazilians in their friendly matches against Senegal and Nigeria. Cameroon is the only African team ever to have beaten Brazil, scoring a 1-0 win in the 2003 FIFA Confederations Cup tournament. In more football news, England recently called up two Chelsea players of Nigerian heritage, Tammy Abraham and Fikayo Tomori. The 22-year-old Abraham, a striker, was born in London and has represented England previously at the youth level. The 21-year-old Tomori, a defender, was born in Canada and has also represented England at the youth level. However, both players are eligible to represent Nigeria at international level because they were born to Nigerian parents. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with a former goalkeeper of Nigeria's national football team, Ida Peterside.
It's a very, very dicey situation in the sense that you need to find out firstly the opinion of the players. I remember some years ago, I was asked to go look for a player that was playing for Man City. I don't want to mention his name here. And I got to England, met his agents, and met the mom. And the mom was very straightforward and said, "I don't want my child to play for Nigeria." And in such situation, what can you do? The pressure is not just on the player. The pressure comes from the parents. You know, some of these African players that have English parents, they want some privileges. You understand? Like Tammy now, if his father or mother has some issues in England, could happen to do with documentations or living standard, they would support the parent more if they find out that their children are playing for England. So it's a catch 2020 situation. So sometimes you don't really blame the players. I'm telling you, I've had incidences where I've been sent to call those players, speak to those players, and some of them refused. We had an incident with Shitu. Shitu finally decided to play for Nigeria. But after a while, you hear these players regretting playing for Nigeria because what you expect from England or how English players are treated and when they come to Africa is different.
There are also fears that after capping these players once, when I say these players, Nigerian players or other African players, they are dumped, they become bench warmers. Mm. They don't have any bright future playing for England. What's your reaction on this too?
Well, it depends on the player. If the player keeps playing well, there's no way he will not play. We remember the story of Fashanu. You know, Fashanu played for England. And after a while, he wanted to come back to Nigeria to be FA president. We refused. We said, when it was time to play, you decided to play for England. We remember the story of Marcel Desailly that played for France. And we revolted too when he wanted to come back and say he was a Ghanaian and wanted to coach the national team. So there are repercussions, and these players must be told, yes, as you are in England, you want to play for England, but you will retire, and one day you want to come back to your country, you'll be rejected because at a particular time, you rejected the national team. It's, like I said, it's a catch-20 situation. The players must be spoken to and told the benefits, the pros and the cons of playing. But I had England coach 2 days ago saying that these players were born in England, and all they know is England, and they don't have anything to do with Nigeria. That's what the players told him as a coach.
There is another young Nigerian star in the making, Saka, who plays for Arsenal. People are afraid, or there are fears too, that the way Tammy Abraham and Fikayo Tomori were called up, that Saka will one day have that call up. Do you think that the NFF should move now to ensure that Saka plays for Nigeria? He's just 17 only.
Mike, I've told you this thing. In the NFF, it's almost inconsequential. I am telling you the truth. It is almost inconsequential because we remember we're an African nation. If the player were playing for, wanted to play for Germany, France, or England, then you can begin to say these are big nations where, you know, no matter what happens, they would benefit. But they're looking at it as Africa and say, what are the benefits of playing for Africa? And there are stories that have come that Africans don't look after the players. So there's always this fear. The central factor might not even be the player. We need to convince the parents. Once we can convince the parents, then the players will play for Nigeria.
That's Ida Peterside, a former goalkeeper of Nigeria's national football team. And Ida spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Hi, my name is Ida Peterside, former Super Eagles goalkeeper, former Morocco Swallows goalkeeper. I want to say a special shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you.
If you were to talk to us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your heart.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
And my Voice of America colleague, Shaka Sali, will be waiting for you Wednesday night at 18:30 GMT UTC with another edition of Straight Talk Africa. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The United States once again dominated the medal table at the recent World Athletics Championships in Doha, Qatar. Team USA tallied 29 medals in Doha, including 14 gold. The U.S. medal total of 29 is one less than the record it set in London in 2017. On the final day of competition, three-time African champion Ese Brume won Nigeria's only medal, a bronze in the women's long jump. The 23-year-old Brume had a leap of 6 meters 91. German athlete Malaika Mahambo won the gold medal with a jump of 7 meters 30. And the Ukrainian Marina Beck-Romanchuk won the silver medal with a distance of 6 meters 92. Getting back to Ese Brume, she's a student at Eastern Mediterranean University in Cyprus. Iron Mike Mbonye called Cyprus and asked Esse how she was feeling after her World Championships bronze medal.
It's awesome. I'm amazed, though. I never thought about that I was the only one that won at first, that got a medal at first. But it's amazing, and I thank God that God used me, and I'm grateful to God.
The next challenge for you and other Nigerian athletes is the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games. How are you preparing for it? And are you hopeful that this time around you are going to get a better podium performance?
I said that this competition, this just completed World Championship, has set a pace for us, all of us, and we're going back to prepare better for Tokyo 2020. And I pray and I'm hoping by the grace of God that we will do better, we'll perform better, and we'll get more medals at Tokyo 2020 by the grace of God. And I'm hoping and I'm praying that God will grant us this dream.
What would be your message to numerous fans out there in Nigeria and even in the U.S. and where you're based in Cyprus about this? What promises do you have for them in future engagements?
I want to say then that I'll try to do better by the grace of God, not to give up. But first of all, I want to say to my fans that thank you for their support. And to the younger fans, the younger ones that are adding, I'd like to tell them that they should always be confident of themselves, that they should believe in themselves, believe in what they know how to do best, believe in their coach, and to those whom God has placed charge of them. And also, they should always believe in the process, which is most important. And also, believing in their coach, because as long as you believe, God will make it work for you. Even if what you're doing might not be right, maybe the right, the program might not be the right, but because you have faith, God will make it work for you. So they should always believe in their coach, believe in their, in the process, and also believe in what they believe in. If it is God or whatever religion they believe, they should always have faith in it. And also, bigger fans, I want to say thanks to them for their support. I really appreciate that. And I'm hoping that by grace of God, next year will be great for all of us, for all Nigerian competitions that will be going for Tokyo 2020.
That's Nigerian athlete Esse Brume, who won a bronze medal in the women's long jump at the recent World Athletics Championships in Qatar. And Esse spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Cyprus. The fastest marathoner in the world is hoping to break 2 hours for the grueling race in Vienna on Saturday. Joining us with more details is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Following a warm send-off from fans gathered at Nairobi Airport, Eliud Kipchoge arrived in the Austrian capital earlier this week to attempt a feat no other human has ever done before, run the length of a marathon in under 2 hours. In what has been dubbed the 1 hour 59-minute challenge, Kipchoge will have to run the perfect race. And the Kenyan Olympic champion says he is confident he can achieve the seemingly impossible.
Well, yes, I'm excited to be here. I'm really looking forward to make history.
Last year, Kipchoge broke the world record in Berlin with a time of 2 hours, 1 minute, and 39 seconds and became the first person in history to run in under 2 hours and 2 minutes on a record-eligible course. But he has run even faster than that. In 2017, Kipchoge made his first attempt to break the 2-hour barrier but fell short with a time of 2 hours, 25 seconds. Whatever time he clocked on Saturday will not be eligible for a world record, but Kipchoge says his goal in his second attempt is not to break records, but to make history.
So with 159 challenge, it's about making history. It's about leaving legacy in this world. It's about actually giving information to the whole world that no human is limited. Be it in your family, be it in your daily duties, be it in your professional way, that you can go beyond what human thinks it's impossible. So it's about actually spreading the message and clicking and getting that message, that message whereby people think it's some things are impossible in a human family.
The 39-year-old Olympian has been training in Kenya with a team of pace setters who have road-tested the course. Kipchoge took a quick tour of the course on Tuesday, and his longtime coach, Patrick Sang, said, although his athlete is physically prepared, a little added pressure doesn't hurt.
Feelings in the body, you know, and you need that pressure also to perform. I mean, when there's no pressure, you don't, you feel like, pressure makes things happen.
Kipchoge will need to shave 26 seconds off his fastest time on Saturday. And four-time Tour de France winner Chris Froome says if anyone can break the two-hour barrier, Kipchoge can.
I think if anyone can break the two-hour barrier, it's Elliot. I think he's got such a focus and determination, and having heard when he set this goal, he's literally just applied himself to this day in, day out for months now, and he's come so close before. So I think if anyone can do it, it's going to be Elliot.
Sonny, I should mention that Saturday is the tentative date for the 1 hour 59 minute challenge. Organizers and performance experts will be keeping their eye to the sky to make sure weather conditions are optimal for Kipchoge's attempt at making history. But weather aside, the road to success looks like it's bending in Kipchoge's favor. He'll be running flat through a shaded park, and he'll have with him top-notch pacers who will run ahead of him in a V formation to help set the pace and ease wind resistance. That is a feature he did not have when he set his world record. Kipchoge clocked his fastest time in front of onlookers that were comprised of only sponsors and a handful of media. But this time, thousands of cheering spectators are expected to line the streets, which running experts say could further boost his chances for success. Well, we will also be looking on to see if Eliud Kipchoge achieves what is widely considered the last great hurdle in track and field. Stay tuned, sports fans. And that's all from me. Sonny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In Rugby World Cup action Wednesday, Scotland, Argentina, and Wales all scored victories in Japan. The Scots had the biggest victory of the day, routing Russia 61-0 at Shizuoka Stadium. Russia lost all four of its Pool A matches and is now packing its bags in Japan, while Scotland is still in contention for a quarterfinal berth. In Pool C, Argentina defeated the United States 47-17 at Kumagaya Rugby Stadium. England and France have already qualified for the quarterfinals in this group, while Argentina and the USA have been eliminated. And in Pool D Wednesday, Wales defeated Fiji 29-17 in Oita, Japan. Wales tops this group with 14 points from three matches and is through to the quarterfinals. Fiji, meanwhile, has been eliminated, finishing its World Cup campaign with 7 points from four matches. Meanwhile, Rugby World Cup officials say it would be inappropriate to reveal their contingency plans should a super typhoon cause disruption to this weekend's final group of pool matches. The fierce tropical storm is predicted to be the most violent to hit Japan this year. The storm appears to have changed direction and is now predicted to strike the Tokyo area. Yokohama is a major commercial hub of the greater Tokyo area, and it's where England will play France on Saturday, and Japan will host Scotland on Sunday. Rugby World Cup rules state that any pool game that cannot be played is not rescheduled and instead is recorded as a nil-nil draw with no bonus points available. Such an outcome, however unlikely, would suit England and Japan, sending both into the quarterfinals as group winners. France would also advance as runners-up, but Scotland would be eliminated. Should there be weather problems later at the Rugby World Cup, The rules allow several days for knockout games to be rescheduled. And that wraps up the October 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Misha Dubinsky. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
You're listening to Upfront, the Voice of America.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Youth, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
VOA podcasts are a convenient way to get your information on the run.
VOAAfrica.com.
Visit VOAAfrica.com and subscribe to our podcast service.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is Science in a Minute.
It looks like Saturn has edged out Jupiter as the leader when it comes to having the most moons in the solar system. A team of astronomers led by Scott Shepard of the Carnegie Institute of Science has found 20 new moons orbiting Saturn, bringing the total number to 82. Jupiter, meanwhile, has 79 moons. The astronomers say each of these new moons is about 5 kilometers wide. 17 orbit Saturn in retrograde, meaning they move in an opposite direction than the planet. The other three moons orbit in the same direction or in prograde. The Carnegie Science Institute has opened up a contest for naming the newly discovered moons. For details, visit carnegiescience.edu/namesaturn's moons. That's all in one word. Good luck. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa Show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive.